Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business. Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Atkinson, and this podcast is sponsored by the Wealthy Speaker Daily Success Planner and Journal. Do you have your copy yet? This planner is an excellent way to start your day off on the right foot, and you probably know what happens when you get started on the wrong foot. Things tend to go a little bit sideways, and certainly that's been something that, I've had to rewind days and go, oh my goodness, I just realized I didn't actually write down some of the things that I needed to map out for the day. So rewind, back it up, and start over again. If you're interested in that, by the way, go to speakerlauncher.com and you can click on our bookstore and check it out. We're also on Amazon now. Today, we're going to be talking, I think we always talk about this pretty much, but today we're going to talk about getting more bookings. If you're not interested in booking more speeches at higher fees by leveraging your uniqueness, well, maybe you just want to FF on to the next podcast. But if you are, we have the amazing Jessica Pettit here to talk you through how she did it. Welcome, Jess.
Hey, thank you very much.
I am so excited to have you on the line with us, and I'm going to do a deep dive into what has transpired in your career. But let me give everybody just a quick little bio on you to get us started. Jessica Pettit, she's got a master's in education, which actually is with a specialty in crisis management. She's a CSP, and she pulls together her stand-up comedy years with 15-plus years of diversity trainings in a wide range of organizations to serve groups to move from abstract fears to actionable habits that lead teams to want to work together. With a sense of belonging and understanding, colleagues take more risks with their ideation, conserve precious resources through collaboration, and maintain real connections with clients over time. Now, Jess, this wasn't written in your bio, but you are the author of a new book called Good Enough Now, and I'm so excited to talk to you about that and everything else. So, Jess, we don't really have an agenda today, but tell us kind of where you started in this crazy game we call speaking and where you're sitting today.
Sure. Well, I think first off, thank you very much for having me. And I hope as other speakers, regardless of where they are in their career, self-assessment base or audience client-based assessment of where they are at. It's really cool for me to be here because it's full circles. I remember meeting you when I considered myself like super new and had no idea what I was doing. And I still have no idea what I'm doing, but I don't feel new anymore. So thank you. So similar to my master's degree, had me working in as a college administrator, a number of different universities in the United States, working primarily with marginalized student populations and assisting them to be better served by the institution and pointing out how the institution could be better serving marginalized groups. And in doing that, I kept getting fired because basically my job was to point out what the university was doing wrong. So they would get rid of me and I would go find another university and do it again.
Ouch. That sounds a little painful.
Yeah, it was. I'm, you know, in my mid-40s now. I think it is also important to mention that I probably am not the easiest person to supervise. So I think that I may or may not have had something to do with this developing pattern. But after the third time I got fired, I was like, okay, I'm going to need some kind of backup plan. And long story short, I was actually at a conference facilitating a very challenging topic. And it's funny now is that I don't even remember what it was because there's so many challenging topics. But after facilitating a pretty deep divide within a national association based on a particular political agenda at the time, somebody at the back of the room stayed late and came up to me afterwards and said, I've never seen anybody who can facilitate really challenging topics the way you can that everyone feels heard you should do this for a living.
Ooh.
And I said, well, interesting is that I feel like I do it for a living, but I keep getting fired. And he's like, well, do it on your own. And I didn't even really know what that meant, right? So the irony is that the third time I got fired, I was driving down Priest in Tempe, Arizona,
yes,
on the way to my exit interview at Human Resources. And I was stuck in traffic. And I looked out my passenger side window and saw this building that was called National Speakers Association. And I had no idea what I was doing with my life, and I had been fired yet again. So I went home and I got on the internet and was like, what is this speakers? Like, what is that? And at the time I was dating my now husband, and he was like, Speakers Association, like electronic equipment.
Yeah.
So that's where we were coming from. And after downloading like a ream of paper that weekend, the Phoenix chapter happened to be meeting, and it all just kind of took off from there. And that was 2005.
2005. So 13 years we're into this. And you've probably hit, you know, many flashpoints along the way. What was one of the earlier flashpoints where you made you think, okay, this is good. This is good. It's working.
You know, it's so I've listened to a number of your interviews and your podcasts, and I will also plug the Daily Success Planner and Journal as someone who hates daily anythings and journal anythings. But it has been a really I started doing your journal at the beginning of this year, and it's been really fascinating. The patterns of the flashpoints, because it's really the same message over and over and over again that I focus on, and then eventually I lose sight of, and then surprise, there it is again. And then, so as I've been prepping for this conversation, I've noticed that there have been a number of flashpoints, and they've been more reminders of the same one over and over and over again. And that is that my premise of the bulk of my existence in this life, if I can sound woo-woo for a second,
sure,
is I am doing the best I can with what I have some of the time. And I feel like that's a good message for me to remember. And it is also conveniently the message I speak and write on.
And that's the premise of Good Enough Now, I'm assuming, is underneath the current in that. So there have probably been times in your career where you've thought, oh, and you know, when you first step into NSA, it's probably a little bit overwhelming, right? Because
it's still overwhelming.
You don't know anything about business at that point, and now you've become an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I know. Weird. I think it took me probably close to a decade to understand my relationship with capitalism while being a solopreneur.
That's funny.
So for a really long time, I was an anti-capitalist solopreneur. And then what's funny is that I guess another flashpoint is then I actually started turning a profit, because that, of course, took a long time. And once I started turning a profit, I realized that now what I'm doing is just kind of redistributing other people's funding, right? And so like my own story around money changed, but my story around capitalism and entrepreneurial enterprise changed. And then now I would even say I'm at a place where I'm having to really look at my story around what it means to be wealthy.
Yeah.
The difference between wealthy and what my story, my internal story, is around being rich, which somehow to me is a bad thing. Wealthy seems responsible and conscious and redistributing resources to other people. So there's a kindness that comes with it that I hadn't really paid attention to because I hadn't had to have that conversation yet. And now here we are.
My coach uses the term, this is comes from Dan Sullivan. I go to a strategic coach, and he says, I want what I want because I want it. And that you don't have to justify that to anybody else. You want what you want because you want it. And it gives you a little bit of freedom. But one of the things that can really help you get over this hurdle, and I suspect you've used it already, is the Wealthy Speaker Meditation that we offer. It's just a free little 10-15 minute morning routine. And it just gives you some really nice conscious messages about being open to bringing in money, because there really is nothing wrong. And let me just clarify, Jess, your definition of wealthy might be completely different from somebody else's, and that is okay.
Right.
What wealthy might mean to you is that now I have all this money and I can be more purposeful and, give it to the places that I want it to go. It can be very philanthropic, or, but also I don't think you should feel guilty to treating yourself.
Yeah, no, it's funny is that there's a movie, some people will remember this, and I'm disclosing my own personal movie taste here, but I think it's one of the best movies in the whole world, and it's called Overboard.
Oh
It's
my
with,
gosh. I just
yeah,
saw it the
Goldie
other
Hawn,
day.
Kurt Russell. I did hear recently they're redoing it. I'm not exactly sure why, but I guess because like Lindsay Lohan or somebody needs a career. But what I think is fascinating, and again, this does actually go to your Flashpoint question, is that I think in my mind, the two worlds that are mentioned in the movie Overboard, there's the obnoxious person who like lives on a
Uptight.
yacht,
Richety rich. Yeah.
right? Who has a closet that I still envy, right? That where it rotates through and it's all fancy schmancy, made of cedar. And then the other person, the main character's kind of life is, not fancy by any means. I think some people would probably say like too many kids to were too small of a house and dirty and like the image of crocheted Afghans on your couch kind of come to your mind.
Right.
And the spoiler alert of the movie is that riches isn't about money, right? It's about like love and family and connection and a sense of belonging, which Flashpoint is the whole point of my message, right? So as I had a story for a really long time that I am resourceful and scrappy. And part of being resourceful and scrappy is, I mean, there's a huge part of my identity in being resourceful and scrappy, but that means I can't ever have a lot of money in my checking account because then I don't have to be resourceful and scrappy. And what I've come to a place of is really exhaling in that I am resourceful and scrappy when I need to be. I don't have to be resourceful and scrappy 100% of the time. I can actually chill. I can actually like get to a place of which for me, to me, what I'm focusing on is really around the concept of daily success instead of this self-created kind of roller coaster of struggles and survival and struggles and survival. Like I don't have to be on a roller coaster. I can actually just sit on a bench and eat some ice cream, and that's cool.
I suspect you're appealing to some people who are listening in. Maybe they've on the road and they've been on the road for a long period of time. And I would really encourage everyone to think about what does your perfect day look like, and how do you get off that hamster wheel of just going and going and going, and really thinking about what it means to you, what you want in your life. For me, it all comes down to freedom. To me, that's what wealthy buys, is freedom to choose whatever I want. We're so lucky in this industry that we have freedom of choice. We don't have to get up every single morning and put on our big girl clothes and go to work. We have the ability to have a lot of freedom in our lives, and I really, really treasure that.
Yeah. Well, and what I think is so fascinating about freedom, right, is that I think that there's a piece of me to continue this roller coaster metaphor that freedom is that moment where you are like brave enough to put your hands up on the roller coaster as you're about to like free fall. And when you're really talking about an entrepreneurial campaign or entrepreneurial system, it's more like riding a bicycle. Right, not a roller coaster. It doesn't have to be a roller coaster. Roller coaster is dramatic and exciting, but like it really can just be riding a bicycle, which is really more about your daily habits. And you're occasionally allowed to coast, but if you're accelerating while coasting, you're actually going downhill. So get to pedaling. I think I had to
Ooh,
slow the
that's deep, Jess.
I
That's
mean,
it's
leave it
deep.
here. If it's going faster and you are not doing anything, it is probably bad news.
Okay.
So, slow the roll, and the bonus of kind of slowing that down is that you really are in charge of this. It's not a ride, you know, like
Yes.
I've been to a million of those retreats where I have to constantly be reminded that my life is not happening to me. Like, I am actually happening to this life,
Right.
which gets to pedaling as an active consciousness, right? Versus sitting in a roller coaster cart. I want to be more on top of my own daily happiness and my own daily spirit.
I like it.
Right. And but I will forget and then insert yet another flashpoint.
Okay. So you talked about becoming profitable. That was a huge flashpoint. How now you have always kind of stuck in this one lane, I guess I would call it, of diversity, have you not?
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, I do think that for a short period of time, I imagine every speaker, this has got to be part of the cycle of when your scrappy and resourceful stuff is high. And so you're like, time management. Yes, sure, I can do that gig.
Right.
I'll be late, but I will try to do it because I need the money. And so I think that that probably is not 100% done. I'm sure it'll show up again in my life, but
Right.
there really is a sense of confidence that it's hard to say this when you're not turning a profit and it's really scary. And when you're not turning a profit and it's really scary, that is one of the most important times, I think, to use your language, Jane, of picking a lane,
Right.
is who do you want to be speaking to? Right now, my answer to that is living human beings with checkbooks, right? But who do I want to be speaking to? What does this gig look like? And what do I want to be doing? And the clearer I am in that lane, the clearer it is for me to be confident in referring opportunities to other people, really honoring what is my real bottom number. I don't want to leave the house for under this number. And that's really hard. You know, like there's a thing on Facebook I saw this week that where somebody was posting like the importance of saving money for retirement.
Right.
And it was coming from a place of like, when you're in your 20s, you should be saving this percentage of your salary, and then 30s, this percentage, and 40s, this percentage. And someone responded and saying that my friends and I Venmo each other money each day so that we don't starve to death. And that's a reality, right? And so I think that there's ongoing questions around, do I quit my day job and do this full time? And there's pros and cons to it. And in retrospect, I probably quit my full-time job too early. And the bonus of doing that is that I didn't have to ask anybody, and I was so desperate that my hustle game
That's how
had
you
no choice.
got scrappy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, some would say, yeah, sure. But I also think that there's a financial planning piece that probably looks like you could do better of a better job of financially planning to move into an entrepreneurial space
Right.
by holding on to your day job. And it just depends on someone's situation, right? Like mine was more of a like immediate forest fire. This is now what I'm doing.
Yep.
And I think it took 7 years for me to turn a profit. And one of the things I always say, you know, you get asked like, what's the one piece of advice you'd give somebody? And I, regardless of whether they're a speaker or what kind of entrepreneur, my most expensive piece of advice I have learned is that you are in charge of your own sense of urgency. So I think first 5, 6 years, everything felt like it needed to be done. Everything was a number one priority, and everything was expensive. And the reality is, you know, 15, 13 years later, everything is still expensive. Everything is still a number one priority. I just know now with more confidence that I can't do everything. And that's what this ride's about, is that I actually, everything will always need to be redone. So that's just part of being employed, self-employed.
Exactly. Let's talk about confidence for a second, because when you and I saw each other, you spoke on the national stage here in Canada for our Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, and you rocked it. Thank you very much. And for those of you who don't know Jess, you know, she doesn't look like your traditional speaker, and I want you to talk to that, because we're talking about leveraging your uniqueness here today. Yeah. But one of the things, where was I going with that? Let me think. One of the things is that you come out and you're funny. humor and uniqueness, I would say, are two of your key advantages, wouldn't you say?
I think so. And what's funny is, again, at the beginning, I don't think I ever tried to look like everybody else, just mm-hmm. because there's just so much work that would need to be done. But I did spend a number of years trying to contain my humor, because I thought it got in the way of content.
Really? That's so interesting to me.
Yeah. And I decided, no, it's not worth it. You know,
hell no.
yeah. It's, you know, I actually said this the other day when I was doing my own coaching program, that I haven't decided if I like that I'm doing or not, but, it's really like when you finally realize what the correct size of Spanx is that you should wear, you don't really know how restricting the wrong size can be until you get the right size. And then you're like, oh, this is not bad. Oh. Right. But you don't know until you find the right thing. And so part of my uniqueness, I think, is required by having the confidence that I do. And I also think it's important to mention that I am the most insecure, self-doubtful person as well. But the trade-off is I get called authentic a lot, which is a very awkward compliment, but, I am who my clients are buying, on stage, off stage, on phone calls. I was signing a pretty big deal contract this week, it was a big hospital, and they responded like, you know, we'll have to send the contract through legal. They asked, has this gone through your legal team? And true to my personality, I responded and I said, yes, it has actually. They approved the original template. If you're interested, here are their pictures and their contact information. And I attached a picture of my dogs.
I love it. That's perfect.
Nobody's ever really questioned it, though. You know, like, I am on top of my details. I have a professional system where I follow up and stay in touch and things like that. Like, I'm doing the work, but I'm doing it consistently my way. Mm. And I'm sure I have lost clients. I'm sure I've lost gigs, because I don't wear enough navy blue, or the navy blue in my hair this week is off-putting to someone, or my tattoos are scary. But the reality is that I'm here to do the work that I need to be doing. And if that's a problem, like if my font is a problem, there's plenty of other people, and I'm friends with them, my colleagues. I'm happy to make referrals to people who are in a different font than me. Can we just actually get to the conversations that matter?
Yeah. And you know, part of your thing is not judging people, and it's perfect. You're absolutely perfect exactly the way you are. And one of the things you're kind of saying about how your perfect clients will find you and the imperfect ones will not, which is totally cool. What about the clients who don't have the budget? Your confidence has soared in that regard as well, right?
Yeah. And I still bite my nails, you know. So I'm very good at holding firm to these weird rules and structures that my boss has come up with. and I also know that there are other things that I'm more than willing to do pro bono work. I'm more than willing to be relatively flexible in my methodology of delivering my content or selling books, or there's a lot of flexibility, and I am also very confident in when it is not the right gig for me.
Right. Nice. And there's something really to be said about that. And I think that for those of you who are letting fear drive the bus, I am hopeful and confident that someday you will show up with a lot of clarity around your value. Wouldn't you say
Yeah.
that once you get really clear on your value, that gives you more confidence?
Absolutely. And can I give some tips on kind of the back door of how this
Please,
works? So
absolutely.
what's fascinating to me about know your value is that I would rather, I don't know, match socks than really sit down and think about what is the value I actually contribute to someone. And maybe, I mean, I'm certain that that is not supposed to be the right answer, but like, that is a hard place for me to sit. It is a hard place for me to ask questions. It's a hard place for me to listen. Typically, what I try to do when I'm forcing myself to do this is listen to my own keynotes, which is, I mean, that's just horrible torture to me. But I try to give enough time in between that I forget what I said.
Yes.
And then I try and listen to it while doing something even more distracting, like pretending I know how to use an elliptical machine or something like that. But the turning point for me was I looked at, so I'm very heady, very quantitative kind of person, which most is surprising to a lot of people because I'm funny, but accountants can be funny too. But I went back and looked at my average plane tickets for the year. And I did this for 3 years. And first off, the sheer amount of dollars I spend on plane tickets, I honestly did not even realize. So when all of a sudden I realized I'm gonna use roughly hypothetical numbers. So when I looked at the last 3 years, I averaged how much did I spend on just plane tickets, nothing else, just plane tickets. And let's say it was $70,000 a year. Like, I've never even had a real job that paid me $70,000 a year. So just embracing a large number is already scary, and that's a number I spent in order to get to where I was going. And so all of a sudden I was like, that is money I will never see again. And to be honest, it was money I didn't even have, but for some reason when I look at my credit card balances, it never feels like real money. But knowing, so that was kind of a flashpoint, I guess. Then I divided out the average. So in this case, we're saying $70,000. I divided out the average number of plane trips I took to guesstimate roughly how much each one of these trips actually cost. And mathematically speaking, let's say that I came up with $1,000. To know that in order to do my job, I, a bare minimum, will spend $1,000 of my own money to do it. All of the sudden, it became an easier conversation of what is my life value. For some reason, that was easier for me than what is the value of my message or my work. So I'm literally paying someone else at least $1,000 to leave my house.
And
Right?
just to clarify, you do get reimbursed for your expenses, correct?
Well, that's the other interesting thing is that evidently not for the first like decade or so, as I was working with an agency, they were actually booking me through San Francisco and not through my actual hometown. And because I wasn't paying attention, which I'm hoping somebody else is stupid too and not paying attention, I didn't know that. So then the value of me spending my own money to leave my own house, then it got a little easier. So then I was like, okay, well, I have to charge at least $1,000. And then when I started thinking about taxes and marketing money, and then what is the value of me being at home, that is how I got much more comfortable with a bottom number. So then being able to accept something under that bottom number, I began to value my own chosen way of living my life. And then when faced with that quantifiable number, I then began to realize the value that people were getting from what I was doing when I was making choices with how to live my life. I don't know if that makes sense. But
I do want to clarify that your fee now is either plus travel or travel included. Which way do you do it?
Oh, 100%. So this was just yet another flashpoint. So
yes,
I've been on my own now for 2 years, and I actually do. I'm going to give real numbers. Is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Great. So I typically do a $1,500 flat travel fee.
Okay.
And depending on their budget or what they're doing, and et cetera, mm-hmm. Sometimes I will say a number and that's included, but I specify that $1,500 is for the travel. And sometimes it's in addition, but I do the flat because where I live is quite far away. And then I don't have to keep itemized receipts for the client.
Right.
And
it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And to be completely honest, I'm a really private person. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of someone else booking my travel, because that's like the only time I get to kind of be alone with myself. And I don't want people to know exactly what I'm doing.
Sure.
And it's too important for me to put that responsibility on someone else. Like, what if they screw it up?
Yeah, we wouldn't really encourage anybody to take anything but the hotel from the client. The client can book the hotel, but everything else should be in your control and then being billed back. Okay. Just if anybody's new to the profession and isn't sure how travel works.
Solid. And the tip I would give around hotels too, and I didn't realize this because I didn't have the kind of clients that were doing events that had hotel blocks for a really long time.
Right.
But even if I'm going to pay for my hotel, they can make the reservation as part of their block so that you're at the host hotel and then you can pay for it. And that's actually come in handy because this next trip, I have 4 days that instead of coming home, I'm just going to kind of park and do some work in a hotel room. And I'm staying at the host hotel 4 days longer. And I don't even know the client knows that. But it's handled and my stuff will already be there.
That's perfect. Okay. And so let's talk about the idea. I think the reason why, Jess, you have been so successful is because you're not the same old same. You're probably not going to be like any other speakers that they've had. And you're going to talk about these really difficult conversations and you're kind of going to get down into the trenches with them in terms of feelings. What would you say? What is it about you that your clients just love? Because obviously you're getting booked again and again.
Yeah. My goal for this year is to start getting repeat business. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do a lot with my content, the way that I'm delivering my content.
Yes.
What is interesting is that when I'm very much known as a very different approach to these diversity conversations.
Right.
And I also would say that in the last year or so, instead of just being the funny one with tattoos, my clients are starting to say that my different approach actually led to results. Oh, and she's funny and has tattoos, which is, that's in itself new for me. But I think that what is key is that, and why my clients like me, is that I'm knowingly and willingly addressing the elephants in the room, some of which my clients are aware of. Most of which my clients know about, but they are so nervous they won't even tell me about them. So either I'm doing, you know, interview, like 20-minute chats with key folks beforehand so that I can figure out what people aren't telling me. Mm-hmm. Or I actually just helped someone with an article for an MPI magazine yesterday about this, but the things that are generally bothering, like, the humans who have access to the internet and the news on any given day, it's not the first time for me. It might be the first time for them. So whatever is happening in current events or big, terrifying issues that are directly impacting the people in the audience, I can facilitate a conversation, or as a keynoter, it's less of a facilitated conversation and more of a monologue that breaks down these untouchable, terrifying, yet in everybody's face topics. And I do it in a way that is funny, but is also very actionable, right? So, for example, the National Parks and Rec Association, they added me in late, like added a whole nother keynote slot, because at the time, within the month or so prior to the conference, the conversation about what to do with monuments or statues in parks that were connected to the Civil War, things
politics,
like that.
Politics, yes.
Huge issue, right? Mm-hmm. But what makes it even more complicated is the permitted or lack thereof protests that people who run the parks are very scared of. And so they were able to slide me in. And then when I listened and read and talked to clients and talked to general members the day before the keynote, statues were only one of the untouchable, what are we supposed to do things. And I don't think that there was an easy answer. But what I was able to do was to say, like, okay, here's the issue now. And I'm able to have a conversation where no one feels judged. And we can really talk about, it's not easy. And just because it's complicated doesn't mean it's not a significant conversation. And so then I can break apart, why is this such a tense topic? And then lay out all of those different options. So then they can go and continue the conversation without judgment, or at least less anxiety.
Well, I just think that you're just going to keep getting busier and busier, because at the core of all of this, you care. That's the big important thing that really shines through from you. But also, the difficult questions are just going to keep coming. I mean, we're in the Me Too movement. There's all kinds of things that are affecting the workplace that are in your wheelhouse. And I just see things being quite explosive for you and you choosing the path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I that really is just personality, I think, but I tend to, if I can steal the phrase, I lean into the topics. Or a client the other day said that I lean into the fire instead of sitting further and further away from it.
Yes.
But it's because these topics are really important, and they're actually not new. They're just ongoing conversations we refuse to have with each other as a society.
Right.
So whether I'm talking about trans bathrooms or trans people's use of facilities on a space, or I'm talking about the importance of non-discrimination policies and the other pieces that you have to do, or I'm talking about current events, or just teamwork and communication. Like, what I really like about my kind of new approach is that it's really more of a subliminal diversity training, because so many people have been turned off or had their fingers pointed at them for so long that they're not interested in even having the conversation about the conversation.
Right.
So I'm kind of Trojan horsing it and coming in. It starts with self-assessment and taking responsibility. And I think if you start from that place, there's a sense of humility there that you then can enter into these difficult conversations that are never going to go away.
And I think your humor is very much disarming, you know, so that people will just kind of let, you know, as soon as they laugh, the energy of the room really changes, right? From being, no, what are we about to hear, to, whew, everything's just all of a sudden everybody takes a sigh of relief and this is going to be okay. And that's a great way to wade in, I think.
The bonus of laughter is that it's an exhale and a community sense of belonging, right? Is that everybody just did something together.
Yes.
And when the more controversy that I talk about, we start in this polarized, made up place. And so I have to get them to be like, you know, that's a made up place. This is what's real. So let's talk about what's real. They laugh. And then instead of like, victory, I just go one level deeper. And then we work there, and then they laugh, and then we go one level deeper, and then we ha ha ha, and then go deeper.
That's really good. That's really good, Jess. Okay, let's talk about your book. How big of a game changer do you think writing this book has been for you?
It has been a huge game changer in a number of ways, and kind of a blip in the ways that I was hoping. So I'm excited that I wrote it. I'm still learning I feel like this is a weird thing to say, but I'm still learning from its author.
It's a really good book. If anybody, let's talk about where everybody can get it after you finish this, but it's really good, Jess.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. I have written a number of products, and for some reason, the other ones are so obviously to me educational tools that directly solved a problem that I didn't find any. I needed something for my own work to help other people have these conversations, and I couldn't find the tools anywhere else. And so I created all these other things to be those tools. And this book, Good Enough Now, really is a message book. And in the vulnerability of like telling people where you keep your underwear is really what it feels like to publish a message-based book. And that's awkward. And then somebody tells you, like you just alluded, that you've actually read my book. And now that means they've seen the inside of my underwear drawer. So my heart skips a beat. I had some calls last week as there's a big association. My book is their book of the month club
Oh,
or
nice. I
book
like
of the
that.
quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super great. So they asked me to be on the discussion call. They wrote the discussion questions, and then I was there if they had any specific questions for the author. And it's probably one of the most confidence building and anxiety vulnerable spaces I have been in, was to listen to, there were, probably 20 people from around the country on a Zoom call, deeply digesting and applying something I remember typing. And it's just like, what is happening? But it is also, and I said this at the in the CAPS keynote, is that I was really burning out, and this kind of new approach and my kind of new take on my own message and the consistent flashpoint repeat, right? Doing the best I can with what I got some of the time, really has reinvigorated my passion for doing this and doing this kind of work. And that has been a game changer as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Now, jessicapettit.com. That's Jessica with two S's, Pettit, PETTIT. Did I get
No, but that's exactly why. So I own all of the ways of spelling
that
Pettit,
all right?
but you can go to goodenoughnow.com
Oh, there we go.
because nobody can spell Pettit, but there are four T's in Pettit if you were going to try.
Oh, there you go. Thank you for
I know.
clarifying that. I want to make sure I get it right in our publication. So, if
Yeah, the
some
joke is that we used to be French, i.e. petite. Then we moved to Texas, where we are seriously no longer petite.
I like it. I like it. So, if people want to reach out to you in one way, I'm sure you have something that people can download or do. What would be the best first step with you?
Sure. So I try to make myself available with the warning that whatever question you ask me, the warning is I will actually answer you. So be
Don't ask.
careful.
Don't ask unless you're serious. Okay.
Exactly. So
Good.
I usually give listeners a texting number because I think often when I listen to really intriguing podcasts, I again am wrestling with an elliptical machine or driving or something. But if you think of a question later, you can text at 202, area code 202 670 4262. 4262. You can text message. It's a Google Voice number. I'm happy to answer whatever questions. And then we are talking about my website, goodenoughnow.com, and you can sign up for a newsletter there and get a whole bunch of stuff free for the newsletter. But I also have a I call it the Baker's Dozen. It's 13 questions, silly survey, although it is statistically reliable because I'm a dork. But that's at goodenoughnow.com/survey. And that's kind of a self-assessment tool to see where you show up in the model that I talk about in the Good Enough Now message, whether you really rely on your head, your heart, or your action when responding to choices.
Oh, wow, that's great. I really like that. So goodenoughnow.com/survey. And Wow, Jessica Pettit, you've given us so much to think about. And I do hope, I'm going to encourage everybody to go to your homepage of your website and check out your video. There was a piece in the video that I really liked. It's you on stage talking, but then it was you being interviewed and filling in the blanks about your work. And it kind of caught that richness. And I had text you or sent you a note saying well done on the video. Really,
Yeah,
really,
thanks.
really, really well done on the website and video. And I hope people will go there and check you out and see why it is that you're so hot. And I want to say, is there anything final that you feel like we've missed on this?
No, I was gonna, I don't know if we have time to do this 'cause I don't want to go over, but I have another kind of how-to tip for folks
Oh, please.
if they're not sure kind of what their premise is or what their message or what their calling is that they can, in my opinion, can then notice is really the root of all the flashpoints. Is that good?
So what you're saying is if you're trying to figure out what your lane or what your calling should be, look at where all your flashpoints are steeped in. Is that, do I have that right?
It's in theory, yes, but I couldn't hear it or find it for myself.
Okay.
And so an activity that I would recommend is that if you are going to speak and you're in audiences, what I did on one trip is I had participants, I gave everyone a little post-it note, and I asked them on one side to write one thing they took away from the program, and the other side is something they learned. Depending on kind of who the person is in the audience, they usually drift to one of those questions. Some people do both of them, but then save them for each of the programs that you think you offer. That's key language, is the programs that you think you offer.
Okay.
This was the smartest thing I have ever done for my business that really helped me begin to see the pattern of my premises and these flashpoint reminders. Because what I did is I came back, and then as I was reading the stack of posties from each of the different programs, is that in my mind, some of the programs were vastly different from each other. But when I read the audience and participants, remember, I will never be my own audience member, right? So listening to the audiences, I was able to find out that some of the programs delivered exactly the same things. So there, I don't actually have different programs that I think I do, but the audience doesn't take different things away. So I could eliminate some things, which really helped picking that lane. It's because if you offer six programs and four of them come to the exact same
Place,
place,
yes.
then what you actually offer two programs, right? So then you can focus. But the other piece was that it was from reading the collection of those notes that the very beginnings of do the best you can with what you've got some of the time came out as my audiences were quoting me back to me. And when I kind of got out of my own way to be reading the audience feedback, I was able to hear my consistent message that threaded all of my programs together. And then that shifted the copy on my website describing the programs, and I believe laid the beginning seeds for my Good Enough Now book. Because
That's
I was too in
good.
my way to see it. So.
That's really good. And all of your roads have gone back to diversity, but knowing what the outcomes of your work are, that's really powerful. I like
Yeah.
it. You can do it on a post-it note, you can do it on a postcard, you can do it on one of those smiley face forms, you can do it however way you want, and pull in and I see now that you really truly are a researcher. You love all of this stuff, don't you?
I do. I'm a dork. I
Yeah,
know.
you're geeking out on it. Okay. Well, Jessica Pettit, I want to say thank you so much for your wisdom and sharing your openness and your authenticity, of course. Thank you for being here with us. And I would like to encourage our listeners, if you've enjoyed our podcast, please leave us a rating, leave some comments so that we can keep getting known by people who don't know about us yet. Share it with your friends. And with that, we will say, wealthy speakers, bye for now, everybody. Thanks for being here, Jess.
Absolutely. And because it means more coming from not the author, the Wealthy Speaker Daily Success Planner and Journal really honestly allows me, even if it only takes like 30 seconds because I'm in a hurry and I just kind of want to write something down, it really has created a consistent way for me to be like, today, what am I going to do inside of this limited container? And how is it connected to yesterday? How is it connected to next week? And I cannot recommend it enough. I highly recommend it. Thank you so much, Jane, for
Thank
that and
you.
circling back. I really appreciate
Thanks
it.
for the nice plug, Jessica. And with that, we will say see you soon, wealthy speakers. Bye for now, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speakers Show. Please visit speakerlauncher.com for your free Wealthy Speaker audit and visit speakerlauncher.com/podcast for show notes and many more resources to help you catapult your speaking business. See you soon, wealthy speakers.